Welcome to another episode of Bring Out Your Undead. I'm Megan, and I have reanimated both Elwyn and Pepperina so everyone can have a conversation about ghosts. Last episode, I sat down with Casey and Mieka, but now I get to explore the most famous undead in this episode called Tragic Stories to Raise Your Spirits.
In this episode, we'll be joining hands to reach beyond the mortal coil and summon forth some other apparitions that go beyond the simple ghost stat block.
Before we get started, I want to ask, do you believe in ghosts?
100%.
A million trillion zillion percent.
Okay, here's the thing. Ghosts, under the title ghosts, is a hard one and a hard thing to sell because of like all of the nonsense around them. But spirits or entities or all those things in this
apparitions,
earth. Apparitions. Yeah. All that shit. Absolutely, I believe those exist.
100%. Anything that could be under the realm of supernatural, yes.
Do either of you have any ghost stories?
Ooh, I mean, like, I have definitely seen ghosts before.
Yeah.
I was visited by my cat, which sounds really weird.
No, mm-hmm. I remember this one. I remember this happening to you.
and like, I bawled my eyes out. But I was lying in bed and I saw out of the corner of my eye, I saw a cat like lean out from like where like they were sitting on the windowsill, leaned out from around the curtains. And I like looked over because I was like, oh, that's weird. I didn't think that my cats were in my bedroom with me. And I looked over and it wasn't there. And so I like got up and looked to see because I was like, oh, I was like, is it my cat Willow? And nobody was there. And so I walked out of the bedroom into the living room and I looked at my husband and like both cats were curled up on the couch with him. And I stopped and I was like, that looked exactly like my cat Maverick, who had passed away 2 years prior. And I had been having like a really shit day that day. And I just know like in my heart of hearts that he was just coming to like check on me to make sure that I was okay. But it was like, it turned me into a tailspin. I'm pretty sure I had texted Megan and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. I do remember this being a thing. Very, very sad.
Yeah.
I have a story and it is not as sad as yours.
I started it off on a pretty sad note.
I'm going to bring it back up. So my ex used to, he ghost hunt. He had all the equipment. I lost it in the forest. I no longer can ghost hunt. But he used to go out all the time with his friends to a building that we cleaned. And there was an empty dentist office, which we always got vibes from when we cleaned there.
Fair.
So that's where he like started at. They had a bunch of like on the voice box, they would get answers. It would say names, like it would say their names. When they asked it its name, it would say Mo. So they named this ghost Mo, right? I went one time and nothing happened. We were there for 2 hours and not a goddamn thing happened.
Amazing. Nothing.
So we had the like EMF reader or whatever. And finally someone was like, Mo, are you upset that here, and it pinged, and that was the only bit of evidence that happened that night was Mo said he didn't like that
you were there. Oh yeah. Wow. Lord, that's hilarious. I fucking love that. Well, I feel like Adam needs to dig them up now, but there was a portion of time when I first started recording in my house that I would record and there'd be the girls or Adam or whatever would be here. We'd do a recording. Roman and I started doing the L5R recordings together at my place. And then I would ship the audios over and then Adam would actually splice and take out voices he was hearing in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And ew. It would, I know, I still no. have them. I have them somewhere, but like,
that just gives me the heebie-jeebies because of the handprint that was on the ceiling when you moved in.
Yeah. So that's to add to that story. When I first moved into my apartment, there was a handprint on the top and let's see, in the middle of the living room. So there's no light fixtures. There's nothing around that area. There's no reason why you would need to be on the ceiling in that mm-hmm. space. And it was like a handprint and then it was dragged.
It was like a streaky, yeah. like dusty, sooty handprint. And I just remember walking in, helping you move in and like looking up and being like,
And everybody would see it. Everybody would flip out a little bit. They're like, get rid of it. Like paint over it. And I'm like, I can't, because if I do that and it comes back, I'll be more afraid of it than I am now.
Yeah.
So I just said, just leave it. And then luckily enough, one of my partners is like a little bit more on the spiritual side like I am. So he's like, no, we'll do a thing. And so we cleaned out the house and like we did a whole thing, and then I painted over top of it, and then everything was fine after that. But there was a period of time when I first moved in that I stopped dreaming, which doesn't seem strange to other people, but Elwyn would know this. For me, it's very weird if I don't dream. I'm a vivid dreamer, a lucid dreamer, all those nine yards. So when I don't dream, it's unsettling. Mm-hmm. So when I first moved in, saw that handprint and existed in my space for the first time, I wasn't dreaming. I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't dreaming. All these things started happening. And then we did our ceremony thing, painted over it, and everything was fine.
Yeah.
So I was like, huh.
See, but as a janitor for 20 years, I've seen handprints in some really,
really
weird places.
Weird places.
So I don't think I would have thought anything of it, because like, every day I question, like, why would you touch there?
Yeah. It's like, why
do you got to touch there? Just leave it the fuck alone.
Let it go. Honestly, it was more like the positioning of it rather than like it being on the ceiling. Cause it looked like the fingertips started close to the wall and like dragged to the center of the room. And it was like, you would expect that if somebody was like up on the back of a couch, like trying to get something off of like, say like a bookshelf or something like that, and they braced their hand on the ceiling, it would be like fingertips dragging towards the wall, but it was the opposite. And like, that was what gave me the heebie-jeebies, was it was just like the total positioning and like the way that it was. Ugh.
We also watched too many murder mysteries. So like, it was like, we're in it. Like,
I mean, like, too many murder mysteries, too many like true crime podcasts, too much supernatural.
Yeah, cop shows like Bones and
whole nine yards. Yeah.
All the things, Dexter. All the murdery shows, 100%.
Any hoozle. So before we dive headfirst into the River Styx, let me give you a quick rundown of the ghosts we have covered so far, which are in episode 21. We covered not only the OG ghost of 5th edition D&D, but also specters and poltergeists. So let me bring y'all up to speed, because you weren't there for that conversation, as well as probably some of our listeners who might be just tuning in now. So the general ghost, the OG ghost, is what we have as a C4 incorporeal being, of course, that delivers necrotic damage with the touch of a finger and causes disturbance in what I call the force. Basically, what that means is that it can cause the air to be cold or just smell gross or just kind of has an ambiance to it, shall we say. And these are the ones that have the ability to possess. So this is a simple failed DC 13 charisma check, and your character can be possessed and lose control of themselves. And the only way to get rid of that basic bitch ghost is to finish its unfinished business. You can kill it, obviously. It has a hit point pool, XYZ. But like, if you want to like do a good thing with a ghost, you can finish its business and it'll go away.
You just become its bitch.
Yeah, you might get possessed and you'll become its bitch to do its bidding.
Yeah.
So then we moved on to specters. So these are our little ghostly wisps that are sitting at a CR1. And their main shtick is that they have had their business done and finished, and yet cannot be laid to rest without having their whole damn soul destroyed. So this makes them legitimately hate living everything on the planet. They hate life, they hate plants, they hate the whole nine yards. So this actually gives an ability called Life Drain. So basically what this is after it attacks you with a melee attack, you must make a DC 10 con save, or the damage taken is taken off your max hit points. However, if you beat this thing, your max hit points do regen back to their regular amount after a long rest. So it's not as scary as it sounds, which is why it's a CR1, but it still kind of can be a little bit damning if someone drops down to zero, because if you drop down to zero, you die. So
yeah, life drain at CR1s.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's big.
It's big. So, and then finally we chatted about the poltergeist, which is another version of the specter, technically, but they have their own business finished and cannot be laid to rest, and they have no idea why the fuck they're here. So they lash out in physical anger, which brings us to their telekinetic abilities of just being able to throw shit at living things because they just fucking hate you. Yeah. So that is the three levels of ghosts we have covered so far. We're going to be covering a couple of fun ones. I believe that we have... Peps, you're up first.
Yeah. I've got the Gallows Speaker, which comes from Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft. The image in the book of the Gallows Speaker is simple yet terrifying. They're long and lanky. Their body is covered in shreds of ghostly fabric to create a robe. The only bit of human you can see is a skeletal head and two skeletal arms with long, sharp fingers. If you take a closer look at the robe, which I actually missed this the first time that I looked at them, and I didn't see it until the second time I came back to write my notes. the robe, the inside of the robes, like the hood and the like back of the cape, are covered in faces wretched in pain, swirling around like they're real creepy looking if you look real close. Which would be because of how they are created. A gallows speaker is not just one singular spirit. They are created from places of mass death or where death occurs often. Over time, the torture-ridden souls form together, creating one entity that knows death in a myriad of ways. This collection of pain causes them to endlessly moan disjointed final thoughts. Knowing an untold amount of pain and death, gallows speakers can predict suffering. They can see doom coming for them and send visions of violent deaths to their foes. Because they are a collective of many, they rarely speak coherently. If you get the chance to listen to them, you will hear a muttering of voices giving final pleas, regrets, and apologies. Should you listen long enough, you may be able to suss out the details of one of its many deaths. Looking at their stats, their AC is pretty low with a 12. And an HP, their HP is about an average of 85. They are a CR of 6. They have a 0 walking speed because they don't actually have feet. But they can hover for 40 feet. Their stats are all pretty basic. Charisma is the highest with a +4, and strength is the lowest with a -1. Everything else is 0s, +1s, +2s. Pretty basic. Damage and condition immunities are the same as most of our undeads that we've went over. It's a super long list, so I'm not going to read them all. Just know they are hard to actually hit. even with that AC of 12, like, yeah, hitting them still hard.
it's the common theme with the ghosts is that, like, their HP is not high. Like, uh-huh. If once you hit them, you probably kill them. Yeah. But they're hard to fucking hit because they're corporeal. Like, they're...
Yeah, they're immune to everything.
Wisps, right? Yeah.
Yeah. They do get a true sight of 60 feet and can speak any language of any of its combined souls that, like, what they knew in life. So, really, all languages, like, if it is a mass death, they can speak pretty much anything, I would say. They do have some pretty fun abilities and attacks. First is divination senses. They can see 60 feet into the ethereal plane while in the material plane and vice versa. Next up, we have the incorporeal movement, which we've seen in a few of them. They can move through creatures and objects as if they are difficult terrain, but takes a D10 of force damage if they end their turn there. And last ability is, of course, the unusual nature. Some of them we see are undead nature, but those are pretty interchangeable. Doesn't need anything really to survive. they have two different attacks. First is foretelling touch. It's a melee spell attack and has a +7 to hit. It does 2d10 +4 psychic damage, and the target must roll a d4 and subtract that from their next attack roll or saving throw before the start of the gallows next turn. And last is suffering echoes. The gallows speaker targets a creature it can see within 30 feet. The target must make a wisdom save or takes 3d12 psychic damage, and waves of painful memories leap from that target to up to 3 creatures the gallows speaker's choice within 30 feet of that target, each of which takes 3d8 psychic damage. And I think that's my favorite attack I've ever, like, read.
That's pretty cool. It's just like, I'm gonna hit you with some knowledge and then you're gonna get a little upset about it.
Right. But, like, they're hitting 4 creatures and only one of them has to make a save. The others just get hit because that first one failed. Yeah. And it's an additional 30 feet. So it's really a 60-foot attack. Like, they're getting the people way in the back too. And they can just do that every turn and hit 4 of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. I love that. I do like the sob story murder tactic. I'm about it.
Yeah. So right. That's what I've got.
Cool. Before we go too far into the details, let's raise some dice. I did this yesterday. I didn't fucking dig for my dice. So excuse me. It's like at the
my bottom. Bag of dice, yeah. Dice ASMR.
I have my one that I keep at my desk for when I'm doing podcast recording, period. Mm-hmm. Everything else is outside, but it always falls to the bottom of the cup.
Oh yeah. So. I have my 5-pound bag of dice next to me. I rolled a 19.
17 for me.
9.
Nice. All right, Elwyn, you are up first. So let's first talk a couple of role-playing options. So thinking of these guys, do you have a quest or a plot hook that you might want to do, or just some generalized role-play tips, do you think?
My brain is blanking right now. Sorry. So
Adam reminded me of a rule that you can hold your action and move to the next person if you want to hold your action.
Oh, is that a thing?
Yeah, he reminded me that's a thing at this podcast that none of us ever do. So if you can't think of anything right now, you can hold your action. Oh, This is a D&D podcast. You can do this.
Can we dash? Could we dash and skip somebody?
Hey, man, if it's in your kit, Peps, I'll allow it.
I'm dashing and skipping Terry next dragon episode.
There you go. Love it.
I don't know why. Like, I'm completely caught up on the fact that as Peps was describing this guy, the only thing that I could think of and see in my mind's eye is like that swirling green vortex of souls in Disney's Hercules.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I saw. And like, I'm caught up on that. I don't know why. I got to get over that. Dude, but that was all I saw.
I would say like that would be what the inside of their cape could look like.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. Like, the inside of his cloak was just like this swirling vortex of just like ghostly faces and things like that. But role playing wise, so this guy, he is the embodiment of mass destruction. And I think it's just kind of one of those, it could be one of those, like, when you're, he is the gatekeeper, he is the sentinel, he is the landmark of like, oh, we got to where we needed to be. This dude's here and he's a thing. For your players, like, you know, they've been specifically asked to go to quest to this battle or to fight this dude or to fight another dude, the big bad evil guy. And all of a sudden they come across this gallows speaker because he is just, there's been so much carnage on the path to where they need to go that he's just been summoned.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was thinking something similar, like looking at like a battlefield, like if you had like a big battle kind of thing go on. And then all I can picture in my head and the big visual that I get is, you know, like in like Valkyries, like they always do like those big, like broad scenic, like after a battle, the Valkyries come from the sky and like take the warriors up to Valhalla, like the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. Think of that in fucking reverse. So these things are rising from the ground in areas where pools of people have died. And like, so now you have a second battle you have to do because all of these things have died on desecrated ground. And now you have like 10 or 15 of these gallows that are now housing the stories of these people that you just killed. And then they're going to give you the pain of what you put on these people. So,
yeah.
And that's their goal. They don't necessarily want to kill you. Well, they're going to kill you doing what they're going to do. But their goal is to use that one ability where you feel what it is that you put these people through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, if you had a lot of them too, with that, like the range that one gets.
Yeah.
Where you have to be 30 feet and then you could hit another 30 feet out in three different directions.
Yeah.
If you had a bunch of them surrounding, they're hitting, each one is hitting everybody all the time.
Yeah.
Like all of your party is getting hit every round.
That's just a GTFO kind of moment at that point.
We're done here. We're done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, if your characters or if your players kind of ventured into a part of the story where you're like, oh, you're probably not a high enough level, it's a good deterrent as well to get them to like turn around and like, maybe we should choose path B instead of path A.
Fair enough.
They weren't picking up on the plot hooks that you were throwing. And they were like, we're going to go down this way. And you're like, are you?
Murder. Yeah. We don't do that as DMs. That's crazy. All right.
I like the that if you listen to them long enough, you might be able to pick out like one of the deaths.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to like sort through a lot of the like murmuring and like imagine just listening to 100 final pleas of death.
Yeah.
I feel like it would be, as a DM, I would make it a roll. Yeah. Like, not necessarily, because, like, if you had sanity in your game, I would make it a sanity roll. If you don't have sanity in your game, it's going to be probably, like, a wisdom check.
Mm-hmm. And a wisdom then, or, like, a perception or something.
And if you fail it, you're flooded with the voices, which causes you to not know what you're doing and maybe causes you a little bit of confusion or fear. But if you pass it, you get one of the storylines. Like, it just wisps through your brain. You hear proper words, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, I would use that story as either, like, I think the most basic is you're, like, looking for someone, right? And you find out that they're in there, you know, you're hearing their death story. But if, like, there is a battle or something and you hear this story of their death, they could be mentioning, and I saw this shield with a, you know, golden sun on it right before I died. Mm-hmm. And the person you're looking for is the person that killed that person. So you know that they were here at some point. Like, I would add in little hints of whatever they're looking for in that story.
Little Easter eggs.
Yeah.
Old character deaths, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can throw some of those in there, too. Even if it's not, like, your MacGuffin of storyline, if you want to just have an emotional moment with your players at the table, absolutely, player death will be something that waves through someone, right?
Yeah.
I say... I am really bad at saying player death versus character death, and Adam and Dan call it on me all the time to define if I mean player death or character death. I'm like, it's the same thing to me.
Player, if you get kicked out.
My player character has died. Anyways, all right, moving on to the exploration pillar to kind of talk about these gentlemen and folks and females and XYZ. So this can be anything from the existential horror and dread, something that you might pick up on, like the body horror, what have you, or is there a certain spell or power that it has that kind of, like, inspires you to utilize? We kind of talked a little bit about that one, but do you have any other thoughts on that area?
Yeah, I was going to say we kind of already covered that. Existential horror, dread. I mean, we all know how much I love psychological torment. And it's, just, like, really playing into the echoes of all of the voices and things like that. It could even be that, you know, you're in an area, you're settling down for the night, and you don't know that you're on this decimated, you know, battlefield that this town is next to. And all of a sudden you just hear, like, all of these whispers because this guy has... you know, he's come a little bit too close to the edges of the village or the town, and you're just like, what in the world is that? As kind of a hook to start an encounter. Body horrors, I mean, like I said, like, I can't get out of my mind the writhing faces of what his cloak could be, and I think that could just be such a cool, just descriptive imagery moment.
Dude,
you could have a lot of fun with that.
There's a reason why I said before we traverse the river Styx, it was because of this bitch right here. Like, and I feel like that's the cool, like, kind of whole, like, existential horror and dread is the fact that it's constantly moving.
Yeah.
And the voices are constantly moving. And, like, maybe if you have enough investigation or passive perception, so you might notice that some of the stories and voices you're hearing aren't coming from its mouth, but it's coming from its cape and its clothing and faces that are coming in and out of its, like, body and stuff like that. Right.
Yeah.
And, like, the exploration of, like, if you're gonna, you know, try and find one of these would be going through the cavern and following the voices and having to be perceptive enough to be able to find out if it's real, fake, or, like, maybe you're trying to follow us a very specific storyline. So you follow that one, you know, like, to Peps's point, you're looking for someone, you found a clue, and now you're going to try and tune into that voice as much as you can to find that specific one, right? Mm-hmm. So, bam. What about you, Peps?
I mean, I always think about, like, with exploration, like, what, before you find them, like, what you're coming into. And I think with this being, like, so many tortured souls, like, that is going to just suck the energy out of, like, that space, you know? Like, it's going to be one of those areas you walk into before you even know something's there. You know something's there. It's just going to be dreadful. And you'll slowly start hearing moans. And, like, the more it knows somebody's there that can listen to it, the louder those moans get. And the, like, crying until you, like, can't stand it anymore.
Yeah, that's fair. Oh, so scary. All right, final one, combat. We all kind of agree that we fucking love that one ability that it has, but are there any other combat items that you like about it? I mean, that's the one, right?
That's the one. That's what you do. You just over and over. I mean, the other one, they subtract a D4
from your next roll.
Like, if you get hit with that, you subtract a D4 from your next attack or saving throw.
It's basically Bane. Like, he's just
But you also you also get, like, damage done, too. Mm-hmm. But not as much as, I don't know why you would use that other than the other one. But
now we're here for the trauma, and the trauma is in the voices.
I do like one of the like suggestions here is what happens when it dies.
I was thinking that as well.
Yeah, like I would definitely think about that with this, with it being so many souls, what happens when they're all released at once.
What that feels like, how it dies and it's done, and that release.
I can imagine it would be battle the second, because I feel like they would suddenly become specters and poltergeists.
Oh, it just busts up into
like ghosts. Like, and they wouldn't be ghosts because they wouldn't. Maybe their finished business is finished. They won or lost the battle or what have you. They're now in this thing because they're caught in its vortex. So now they're like, again, specters or poltergeists that have no purpose to be here but are still here because this bitch sucked them up. And so now they're pissed off at you, and they're going to be like, well, how dare ye? Or the opposite, or they are a bunch of ghosts that their unfinished business was that, like, they got sucked up by this thing and they only are here because this thing is here, and when it's gone you have now freed all these souls. So that would be a good thing to tap into.
I always hated that in video games when you like kill a big thing and then a bunch of little things pop out of it.
You're like, fuck it.
Like I always Diablo with the like the maggots or whatever, and you'd like explode it and then more maggots come out.
Mine is the hands in Legend of Zelda that drop from the ceiling and like crawl towards you, and you kill one hand and it becomes three, and then they choke you to death, which now as an adult seems like a great idea. Why did I hate that as a child? But you know what? Maybe that's where my kinks came from. Who can say? All right, moving on.
They all came from somewhere.
It's true. Childhood trauma. Elwyn, you got one to share.
Yeah, so the next creature that we're going to be talking about comes from the Journeys Through the Radiant Citadel. So haints can come to be after humanoids meet an unfortunate or a mournful death. While there's not really much to note as ways of like ghastly or gruesome features, I think kind of one of the more terrifying features of haints are the lack of abnormalities and their ability to just pass as humanoid, like not look like a ghost whatsoever. So they, haints hold an ability called change shape, which allows them to assume the form of their former corporeal selves. And with a deception of like +6 and a stealth of +8, they're actually pretty convincing in their feats. So the image of haints in Radiant Citadel is kind of a nod to real world lore as well. So they're depicted as like a green ghost with a mask, wearing a tunic and sandals. Stories of haints have been passed down in African-American folklore for generations, originating kind of along the Carolina coasts, and they spread into the South and up into the Appalachians. So, I mean, like, it's kind of pulling from real world lore and things like that. And I kind of did like a deep dive into folklore and things like that out of like Mississippi and things like that, and found out that there's actually a color called haint blue that is used to paint porch ceilings as kind of like a ward against evil spirits and like haints, to kind of represent water, which they're not able to cross over. So it's kind of like a symbolic mystical ghost moat in a way, but it was like really cool. And I was like, you could totally like throw that into like, you're walking into a village and all of these like, inns and like houses and things like that all have like blue porch ceilings and things like that. So I kind of did a really deep dive into it. There's a lot of like amazing, rich, beautiful, like vibrant stories that have come out of haints in the real world. But in D&D world, they don't really have anything that really ties them to any one specific location or anything. It is just they arise from someone who had an unfortunate or mournful death. And they have the ability to kind of like influence people to kind of exact revenge on them, or they might even just kind of view innocent people as kind of like the bad guys that did ended up killing them. So they're a little bit confused. So onto notable kind of like stats and abilities. Like I had mentioned earlier, these guys have a high deception and stealth at +6 and +8, respectively. They have a CR of 7 with an AC of 12 for an average of about 75 hit points. It has your typical damage resistances and condition immunities that we've kind of covered with a lot of our other undeads, as well as like incorporeal movement and unusual nature. It also has 60 feet of dark vision with a passive perception of 11, and Hates have a walk speed of 30 and a fly speed, or kind of more like a hover speed, of 30 as well. Where Hates really shine through, though, is their attack. Firstly, Hates have multi-attacks, enabling them to make Sorrowful Touch twice. What is Sorrowful Touch, you might ask? Well, it's a melee spell attack with a +6 to hit, a 5-foot reach, and 4d8 +3 psychic damage. Hates also have a bonus action called Shared Sorrow, where they can target one creature within 60 feet that is missing any hit points and share its own personal torment with them, causing that creature to make a DC 14 wisdom save or be incapacitated. That creature can make a saving throw at the end of each of its subsequent turns, ending the effects on a success and making it immune to shared sorrow for the next 24 hours.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So these are like your like low-key doppelganger kind of things. Like
kind of. Yeah. I mean, like,
I mean, they have their own form.
They're not so much doppelganger because like they're not assuming other people's forms. They're passing as human. They're passing as living, essentially. Yeah. So they look like themselves, they talk like themselves, they act like themselves, except they're vengeful.
Fair enough. All right, let's raise some dice.
Ooh, 18.
I got 18. Thanks. You got a 5, you got a 6. Great. I'll answer my own question first. So talking about role-playing with these folks at or quest plot hook or something along those lines, or just general role-playing tips. For this one, I like the idea that this is your NPC that's just been hanging out in the party that everyone loves. They find out later on as a ghost.
You stole my thing. That's what I was going to say.
I mean, it's the easiest one. You know what I mean? Either they're the quest giver that sends you on a fucking wild goose chase to do its bidding. Uh-huh. Oh, or yeah. They're an NPC that joins you, or it can be you could even as a DM make it a player character who did die outright. Like if you're one of those tables that hides your dice for death saves, hides your dice for death saves. So you don't know if they're going to die or not. You could have them come back as one of these things and then they would be acting as normal, except all of a sudden their demeanor changes and their goal changes and they're a little bit more hard pressed to make those goals occur.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's almost like having a possession at the table, but in a very different way.
Then they start to get suspicious of the other players because they have that like confusion of who killed them.
Yeah. So they might
saw, have like they saw your face as they died. So they think now
you done did it.
Yeah. You did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe you were next, Peps.
Yeah. I know, but you stole all the good ones.
I'm sorry. Well, think about a way to role play them though then.
I mean, role playing, I would, if it's going to be a long term, like reoccurring NPC passing as, a humanoid or corporeal, I would definitely lean into that confusion bit. Like at first they might not think you are, but like the more your players will boast about their adventures and like, oh yeah, that one guy that we, you know, had to take down. It's going to hear those things and get confused and think, are these the people that killed me? And like they keep telling me
they're my friends, but I don't think they're my friends.
I don't think they're my friends. Yeah. I think, you know, but like of you're all adventurers brag about the shit that they've done.
Yep.
So especially if there's a bard in the party, that's their whole job. So, like, the more that they talk about that, the more they're going to be like, these are the bad guys, clearly. Yeah.
They're the one that might actually give you, like, that moral compass of, like, you know, like we murder, you're murder hobos.
Yeah, I was going to say, stop being murder hobos.
Yeah.
But Ellen, you have any other further points around the roleplay area?
I kind of took it, or I was thinking like in a different direction of like, they are kind of your quest in a way where you've been sent by, say like a cleric or something along those lines to be like, go retrieve this body. Like this body was, you know, one of our brethren. And we need to bring them back. And so you go and you travel to like this town and you go to one of the temples that's there or something like that. But then all of a sudden, like, this dude's there and he's alive. And you're like, we came to come get you because you're supposed to be dead. And he's like, yeah, hard pass on that. Not dead, but like, help me kill these people because these people killed me. Or these people are bad. They didn't kill me, because he doesn't think that he's dead or that he's like trying to exact revenge on it. So it's kind of like one of those like mind fuckery kind of moments of like, aren't you supposed to be dead? Why aren't you dead? Why are you here? What's going on?
Oh my God. It would be one of those things where like you're sent to go and either retrieve his body because you know that he's like, someone did kill him. So you're going to go retrieve his body. And you know, it's at this temple full of like other clerics that have been taking care of it. So you go to this temple, find his body, like find him before you find his body, and then like start talking to him. He's like, no, like I've been trying to get revenge on these people because they've trapped me here. I can't.
Yeah.
And I can't leave until I get like this certain item or this certain XYZ. Yeah. And so like your goal now is to go into this temple that you now think is an occult.
Yeah.
Murder them all to find out that he is just super confused because this
he
is
actually
not
is
him.
Dead.
Yeah. And you now you just murdered all of this, like this whole entire temple.
Yeah.
Murder hobos.
Murder hobos again.
Always just circles back to that murder hobo.
Mm-hmm. All right. Exploration piece. Something I want to try and find, like something I'd like to hear from you guys is, what are some clues that we would give folks as DMs that this is not the person that we think it is, or that it is one of these ghosts instead of the actual person we think it is? So perhaps you kind of spoke to like leaning into that confusion a little bit in that kind of role-playing aspect. But I would also like to think that like they would have a scar of the wound that killed them.
That
is like itchy or painful, or like say they got stabbed through the chest. They're constantly like scratching at their chest, you know, or like just like it's a wound that never heals even. So like, let's say they got stabbed in the side and they have a festering wound. Even the group knows the wound exists, but for some reason it's not healing. We need to take this man to a healer because we can't figure out why you're not healing. Right.
Yeah.
Small things like that. What about you, Peps? Do you have any other ideas around that?
I was sort of thinking about like playing off of the idea of like every porch is painted blue, you know?
Yeah.
This town knows that somebody in it is not right.
Yeah.
Like people keep dying, weird things keep happening, but they don't know who it is.
Yeah.
So the entire town is suspicious of everybody because nobody knows.
And particularly more suspicious of like newcomers that come to town as well. So you might kind of get shunned a little bit as you get there.
Like you would have to look for those sorts of things in literally every person in the town because you don't know which person is the haint. Like it could literally be any one of them. Mm-hmm. And they're all telling you, I think it's my neighbor. Like it's gotta be. He did this weird thing yesterday and you'd have to like go investigate that. So, like, you would have to pick up on everybody's little weird intricacies. And
a really fun whodunit.
Yeah.
Yes, especially because they kind of, a big part of haints is, like, they try and convince you to exact revenge on their behalf. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely, like, everybody is pointing fingers at somebody else.
I would love it to be just, like, the exacting revenge is just petty neighbor squabbles. It's like...
Yeah,
it's got to be Bob because he put his trash can on my side of
must be pissed. Yeah,
it's got to be him, obviously.
Like for me, like when I read about like that hate blue and things like that, like it's got its own hex code, guys. Like that's how like very entrenched in like their culture it is, which I love. But like as soon as I read about that, I was like, oh man, I'm like, could you imagine like being in like a coastal village, like just walking up to a coastal village and you just make like a random perception check and like every porch is blue and you're like, why is every porch blue? Like that makes, what's up with that? Like, is it a nice little like coastal, you know, seafront kind of blue ambiance type thing, or is there like a deeper meaning to it?
Yeah. I would like the idea that you as a DM introduce that as they walk through the town and no one picks up on it.
Yeah.
As players, you're like, God damn. And you're like, as you walk, you find a building where there is someone actively painting their porch blue.
Yeah.
That's interesting, DM. Don't much care. It's like, oh, damn it.
Yeah.
Oh Lord.
Yeah.
How many times do you as a DM drop little nuggets that are supposed to like help them and they latch onto that one thing that you're like, that has no relevance to the story or plot whatsoever.
It's a door, guys. It's a door. Yeah.
They just have a real strict HOA, you know.
Yeah. Amen. And finally, combat. So, like, we can talk about hunt tactics. Like, we did talk about that, just doing a big old whodunit, which I think is really cute. But like, let's talk about, like, what we think would happen when this thing dies. So I do feel like it would be an emotional thing for your group, especially because it feels like you're probably killing an innocent, but you're not, or killing like an NPC, or killing like a PC player who you've had following you around for a while, depending on what storyline you decided to go with. So I feel like because of its abilities mixed in with what it is, like if you were to kill this thing, you would feel the pain of its all of its existence. You learn this person's history, you learn everything that they've been through, like all those pieces. And then their soul just goes to rest, right? Like,
yeah.
But you would feel all of that. And that's what I would lean into for sure.
Yeah, especially with like the shared sorrow ability. Like, yeah. As a bonus, I would pop that off as they die and just everybody feels it.
Yeah.
In the area.
Yeah. It is only one creature, but you can always DM spice it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just spicy.
Do it for the plot.
Yeah. Do it for the emotional damage.
Yeah.
Roll for emotional damage. Don't mind if I do, GM.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Lord.
I love this, you know, both of these that we've talked about, that it's just emotional. It's literally emotional damage. That's what they're doing. Like, they're just showing you their torture and death and pain. And like,
yeah, it's a nice theme.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
all right. Well, I'm going to talk about our last one. It's not necessarily as sad and creepy as your guys's are. So I feel like it's not as an exciting note to end on, but they're pretty cool. We're going to talk about the undead spirit, but before I can paint that picture, I need to y'all to understand that there is a spell called Summon Undead that is actually what causes these spirits to come to life. So this is the result of a spell.
Okay.
So the Summon Undead spell is a third level necromancy spell. So as an action, you can cast it and call forth an undead spirit within 90 feet of you. And when you cast it, you can choose between either a ghostly form, a putrid form, or a skeletal form, or skeletal, whatever you want to say. Which then changes the stat block ever so slightly depending on which direction you go. So stats wise, let's tackle what the undead spirit does as a whole, and then I'll kind of break down some of the differences between the three of them. So this is a medium undead creature thing. The AC is determined by 11 plus whatever the spell cast at. So it's a third level spell, then it's a AC of 14, so on and so forth. And then the hit points do vary based on which one you choose. I'm not going to go too much into the math of it, but basically it's an average of 30 to 40, depending on which direction you go. So not a huge pool, but keep in mind, again, this is an undead thing cast from a spell. So I don't think it's supposed to be monstrosities in any way.
Yeah.
They do have a general walking speed of 30, and their stats are actually pretty good, being above average in all of strength, dex, and con. And then their dump stats are intelligence and charisma. Otherwise, it has a multi-attack that is equal to half the spell level that it was cast at, rounded down. So it's weird because it's a third level spell. So you're going to cast it at level 3. It has a multi-attack, but it's can only multi-attack at half. So you're still only doing one attack, right? That's the math that checks out, right?
Yeah, I think that's the math that maths. You'd have to do it at least at level 4.
To get two attacks.
To get two attacks.
Their attacks, however, are pretty hefty, I will say. What I'll do is I'll break down now, because all of its abilities are dependent on which one you choose. So I'm going to break down the difference between the three now. So if you choose to go with the ghost, so these ghosts not only become ghosts, so they're incorporeal and all that kind of cool stuff, but it gets a fly speed of 40, so again, incorporeal. Then their attack is called Deathly Touch, which is a necrotic melee attack that requires a wisdom save or become frightened. Then the putrid form gains what's called the Festering Aura, which we have seen before on some of our undead. It's the one where if you start your turn within 5 feet of it, you have to make a con save or be poisoned. And then its attacks are called Rotting Claw. This is a slashing melee attack that does damage, of course, and then requires a con save or be poisoned. So I think you're seeing a theme here. Ghosts be ghosting, the putrid be poisoning, and then there is the skeletal options, which only gets an added attack, which is called Grave Bolt, which is a ranged necrotic damage spell. I'm not sure exactly what this is supposed to look like. It's not described in the book, but I would like to say that it's ripping off pieces of its bone and throwing them at you like they're darts.
Love it.
That's how I picture it anyways. It's not written that way. It literally is a ranged attack that does X, Y, Z damage. That's how it's written. There's nothing. Yeah.
Flavor so, that shit up.
A little, it bores me a little bit, but like I would flavor it if I was a DM.
Yeah.
Anyway, so those are the undead spirits. Mm-hmm. So again, not as traumatic as what you guys got to discuss. So I'm a little bit sad that I didn't get to talk about, you know, my own traumas, but that's okay.
Yeah.
We can move on.
Next episode.
Yeah. All right. Raise some dice. I've got some questions, fam.
We could talk about your traumas anytime you want.
No, it's fine. I'll talk about it. We'll do that in the After Dark series.
Yeah.
This is a safe space.
It's the 11. Internet. I got 12.
14.
All right, Elwyn, you are up first. So, reminder that this does come from a spell, so there might not be too much information to kind of give and help with, but in terms of role-playing, if you were to have someone who casted one of these, what are some role-playing tips you would have for them?
I would definitely say that they would need to make sure that they have their intentions clear, because they are summoning something that has a bit more of a conscience. And so it has the potential of going sideways. It has the potential of failing. It has the potential of a lot of catastrophe on it, but it also has the potential of being like real badass. So I'd say, lean into it and kind of, I always like these spells as characters, because it's kind of the character's turn to kind of step into kind of almost DM shoes in a way, because they kind of get to control something that's not just their character as well, or not just like a familiar. So they kind of have that ability to kind of flex it. So, I mean, I would only like, my only thing would be like, lean into it and really paint the picture of it and really have fun with it. And also don't forget that they exist, because sometimes I feel like characters will summon these things and then get distracted by other things and then completely forget that they exist.
Yeah. As a DM, like, the first thing I would ask once you summon one of these is like, give me a little bit of its personality. What does it look like when it's summoned? Like,
yeah.
Ask for those, like, what do your spell look like kind of questions for your players, so that they can kind of get into it and like actually like put some emphasis on the fact that this thing is now on the table.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe be sad when it dies. You know what I mean? Like one of those things. But other than that, like, there isn't a lot of, there's no pictures of them in the book. There's no visualization to what these look like. So if I was to describe them, that's why I would say, like, if even if your player didn't want to, I as the DM would give a little bit of a description of what they would look like. Like, what kind of skeleton is it? What kind of ghostly figures does it have? Like, does it have like long fingernails, as we like to say here on the Undead podcast? But, you know, you're going to want to kind of like describe these a little bit more. But what about you, Peps?
Yeah. I like the idea of like, just, it's a spellcaster sort of like practicing or whatever, or like an ADHD one that, like we said, might forget that it's there. Like a necromancer's got so many things that it's raised and it's got to think about, like, these just sort of like scamper off.
Run away.
And are on their own, right? Like,
yeah.
And then they're like, oh, I thought I summoned that guy. Well, I'll summon another one. And like, that one gets, and it becomes a problem because it keeps summoning them in this like area. And your party just comes across all these like lost.
Yeah.
These lost.
Just wandering skeletons.
Yeah, just wandering because they don't have a purpose, because they're just a spell.
Okay, bye.
Like skeletons and ghosts and like zombie creatures. Like,
oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Next question is, so out of the three attacks that you get, based on which one you want, so I'll remind you of them. So for the ghost, it's the deathly touch, which is necrotic damage, and become frightened with a wisdom check. Putrid form is the scratching claw that will cause poison without a save. And then for the skeletal one, it is the ranged necrotic dart. I don't know what it wants it to be, but it's a necrotic ranged attack. Out of those three, which one is your favorite?
I mean, like, I always like deathly touch, because like, it just like floats through you. It's like the psychological of like, this thing was in me.
Yeah.
Because, like, you could definitely play it up of, like, it moves through you, and as it moves through you, it uses its deathly touch. And then there's just kind of, I don't know, there's that psychological...
horror. Yeah.
Psychological torture. Amazing. Although, like, Gravebolt, when you were describing it, like, I don't know why I was just thinking, like, these skeletons are just summoned with armor on, so they've just got crossbows. Like, that's what I was envisioning as well.
Let me see what the damage is on this sucker. One sec.
It's a 2d4 plus 3.
Rotting Claw, which is the putrid grave bolt, which is the skeletal. Yes. So yeah, 2d4 plus 3 plus the spell's level of necrotic damage.
Yeah.
So
it's just a crossbow bolt.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, a little bit boring, but also kind of cool that you could, like, raise a skeleton in, like, full metal plate armor. Like, just, like, full armor. Like, I'm just thinking, like helmet, and like it's got like this little crossbow. It's what do you want me to do?
No, I'm gonna whip bones at people.
I also kind of like that idea as well.
Right.
Yeah, that's the only reason I like that one is when you mentioned, like, I think they're just ripping bones off and chucking them.
Eat skeletal bones.
Just throws an ulna down the...
I only like that because of the bit you made up that's not actually in the book.
No, it's not. It's again, but that's the thing. There's no descriptor for it. No. So you can do whatever the hell you want.
Do whatever you want. Other than that, I don't know, maybe the putrid one.
I think that this is a good one, that it actually allows you to kind of flex your imagination a bit. It gives you a good foundation that you can build off of and that you can kind of make it your own to fit your environment that you need.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Any final thoughts on any of the three that we talked about today?
No. Just, you know, make it hurt, make it painful.
Make it traumatic. Like, yeah.
Make it emotionally painful.
Make someone cry.
If you don't make somebody cry at your table, you did it wrong.
Yeah, you're doing it wrong.
Like, bring up, I had a character once that, like, she was a fallen Asmar, mm-hmm. and she got, like, sent on a mission, and she came back, and her entire town had been killed.
Ugh.
Because people were looking for her, because she was an Asmar. Like, I would use that. Like, if she came across a gallows speaker, it would be of her town. Fair like, enough. Like, her parents, everybody she's ever loved would be in that one spirit, just, like, crying out to her.
Creepy.
Like, make it hurt.
Awful.
I think as just being entrenched in D&D and the characters that we've played and the games that we've been a part of, I don't know a single person that has played D&D that hasn't had some sort of, like, traumatic character development moment.
Existential crisis at the table. Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely also been a place where I've worked out real world trauma. So it's been great.
Oh, Lord.
So, on a scale of bone-chilling phantoms, how would you rank these creatures as part of the undead landscape in D&D 5th edition? So let's start with Gallows Speaker.
I really like them. I would give that a 10.
Like, bone-chilling, I'd say 10.
Yeah, me too.
They're really cool. For being such, like, a smaller creature, it's it's more interesting, I think, that a lot you can add into a DM. I think they're really, and very creepy. Like,
yeah.
If we're going to go, like, bone chilling creep factor, super creepy. Like,
the
river Styx is in your cape. Like,
I definitely think that it has the ability to be dramatic. The flourish of the cape.
Swooshy, swoosh, swoosh, swoosh.
Yeah.
Okay, what about Haints? 1 to 10 on bone chilling. I'd say they're not so much with the bone chilling.
Yeah.
They're not so much with the scary. They're more with the, like, disturbing, or with, like, the puzzling, or with the
psychological thriller.
Trauma. Yeah. Psychological thriller. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, the trickiness of them. And
Yeah.
They are your murder mystery.
Yeah.
100%. So I don't know. I like them. I think there's a lot you could do with them. So, like, maybe a 7.
Yeah. I was going to say 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to give them, like, a 4.
Bless.
Yeah. Because I do think you can use them in a lot of different ways.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, fuck yeah, bud. Absolutely. Yeah. Sorry, my Canadian is coming out.
I was like, that was so Canadian of you. And then summon undead on a scale of 1 to bone chilling or bone tossing.
I think it's a cool spell.
Yeah.
Like, if I was to be a necromancer and I just wanted to be able to throw out some undead, I would definitely take this spell. Like, it's really cool. So, and you, there are options to make it more flavorful if you wanted to, right? Like, it's not just your everyday classic spell and you're not murdering things to get undead creatures. You can actually make your own, which is really neat.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, it's a really cool spell, but is it a cool, like, if you just look at it as a creature?
Yeah, it's a single creature, lasts for an hour, concentration spell.
Two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it could be like a good, it could be a good extra kind of buff if you just need that, need a little extra help.
Hey, man, like if you needed to throw out a distraction so you can run in a different direction while you're still like sneaking around, this is a great tactic for that.
100%.
Yeah.
So
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's just got like more, it's more limited than the other two in creativity wise, you know?
Yeah. Because you are limited to what it, it can do, which is not a whole hell of a lot once it's in existence. It sounds like there's a lot to it because it has three different options, but once you have one out, it's very simplistic.
Yeah.
Right. So,
and the other two are just like, there's so many layers of like trauma that you could do.
Yeah.
<it's very> That makes it that bone chilling. Whereas it's like, all right, well, you summon a ghost.
Glad we're all here for the drama, you know?
Yeah. I mean, with the summon undead, though, it's kind of one of those, yes, when you're like level four, or you cast it at like a level four or something like that. But then like you cast it at, well, I mean, like, I guess even if you cast it at, like, if you decided to use a ninth level spell to cast it at a ninth level, you're really only getting four of these guys.
Yeah.
At most.
That's fair.
Yeah. Can't really raise an army with that.
Small, tiny army. Un petit peu.
The regime.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, now it's time to close the casket on this part of our conversation on undead in D&D 5th edition.
Tried.
If you'd like to discuss what you've heard here today, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and at r/itsamimic. For more episodes on monsters and other D&D topics, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Bring Out Your Undead. If you'd like to support us, we have a donate button on our website, itsamimic.com, as well as a store and a Patreon. You can check the show notes for more details. Thanks again for listening to It's a Mimic, where you never know what you're going to get. There she go.
Yeah. Your link sent the longest link I've ever seen.
Normally I delete half of it, but I was way too fucking lazy to do it. So yeah, today is one of those days where I'm just like, copy paste, have a nice day. Too bad, so sad. Eat a dick.
There's our end credits right there.
Yeah.
Too bad, so sad. Eat a dick.
Eat a dick. With all due disrespect, consume a flaccid dick.
That's just a like definition of the undead episodes.
Yeah, very much so. Oh, Lord. All right, you ladies ready?
I guess, yeah.
All right.
All right.